Good evening, everyone. This is day 15 of May Days. I'm not quite sure how I'm going to do this. It's 8 o'clock and the ice cream man's... Shut up. Sorry, not you. Right, let's turn that off. I haven't got enough hands in this life, I tell you. We're halfway through May Days, so I'm going to go outside. I've got my coat on. I don't know if it's that cold, but we'll soon see. Sorry, I'll have to put the phone down a minute to open the door. Okay. Hope it's pleasant enough to sit out here and not freeze. Chilly, actually, but I've got a cup of coffee. I don't normally drink coffee this time in the evening. I've got a Nescafe sachet because I thought it's not as strong as a rose. Now, what am I sat on? I hope it's not rose for. Me properly. You're on my lap at the moment. I think there's some kind of mocha or something. Go away, dogs. I'm not in the mood for playing. This is a serious room. I decided, as we are halfway through May Days, the month of May, I'm going to do a reflective brew because I've got to think there's a lot of anniversaries for me in May. And actually, there's five things. Two of them are linked. And they were all pretty big life-changing events. So this is called, I'm going to call it something like May, the life-changing month, or something like that. Now, I have talked about probably all of these things at some point, but not in the same boo. I first of all want to talk about something very serious. Now, I have done a post about this. It was back last August, if any of you have got the willpower. Niall, off the grass, to go through all my posts. I did actually like it. I favourited it recently. There's the ice cream man. Not because I like my own stuff, but because someone told me that they hadn't heard it. And I thought I would have done... I knew I'd talked about it, and I thought it was last May. It was called A Life-Changing Experience or something like that, How I Came to Have Children. And I actually went back through all my posts. It took me ages, because there's a lot, and I found it, and I favourited it. Now, if you want to listen to it, that's probably going to be your quickest way to find it. However, it was a few days ago, and I have listened to a lot of posts since then, and I do tend to favourite a lot of things. I know people don't really know when you like their stuff, because unlike Facebook, you're not notified, you are if you go to the website, but not in the app, which I really think you should be. Or I think it should say on your post how many likes it has, like it has the comments. But anyway, I have nearly 3,000 likes, so as you can see, I do like a lot of stuff, and you will all, if you post, find things from you there somewhere. But anyway, you won't have to go too far back to find that, I don't think, if you're interested in listening to it, because I'm not going to tell the whole story. I just want to talk about this month, because it's a beautiful month. Yeah, it comes with mixed feelings for me, because on the 13th of May 1992, my best friend from school gave birth to her son, Melvin, and it's a long story which I'm not going to go into now. You can find it out if you want to listen to it. And at the time, I did get a lot of direct messages about it. But if you want to, feel free to listen. If you don't want to, I'll just briefly tell you the story. My then partner and I had talked about having kids, but he was very unsure about us having them, and he didn't really want to. And we actually split up for a while, and then we got back together, And, you know, we talked about it, but we hadn't really made up our mind. And I really never thought I'd wanted kids, but then I realised that I got to a point in my life where I realised I did. I think this probably happens to most women if they are going to ever want them at all. And this particular night, I'd been out with another friend of mine from school, we'd been out to a committee meeting or something, and then we'd been for a drink afterwards. And she just happened to casually mention on the train on the way home that that my friend was pregnant. And the reason I hadn't known it was because I'm very bad at keeping in touch. And her and her husband, my friend and her husband, my friend is visually impaired, but her husband is sighted, and she has got very good vision. She doesn't use a cane or anything like that. But we went to school together nonetheless. And she and her husband were in Sierra Leone on working for the voluntary services overseas. He was the project manager of some project or other. And they were coming home because she wanted to have the baby back in the UK. And they'd been over there for 3 years, and I was very bad at keeping in touch. I always am. So I was really excited to hear it. And then it made me really think, well, oh, come on, you know, I'm going to get left behind here. Not that it's a competition, but I really want kids. And I never thought she was the child type of person. And even it was like, even she's having kids, you know what I mean? Even she's having a baby. So when we got back home, I told my partner, and I said, you know, we talked about it again. And then on the back of that, we actually decided to try for a baby. And I don't know if we did. I don't know if it was there and then. But that month, it was that month, because this was like the beginning of January, like the 5th or something like that. And I was, you know, the first month of trying, I got pregnant. And and so when she came back to the UK and she gave birth, my other friend let me know again, and we got back in touch, and you know, we sent each other presents for our babies, and I was so happy to be in touch with her again. And then a year later, we received an invitation to go to his birthday party, and that was, he was born on the 13th of May, but this was, the party was to be held on the 16th of May. In London. So I was really excited because I wanted to see her again, and also because it was Connor's first, you know, he was only 7 months old, and it was his first party invitation, his first ever. So we went up there. I'd never met her husband before. And so we all had a really lovely time, and we held each other's babies, and we had good fun, and, you know, it was just lovely. And then we went home saying, yeah, we're keeping in touch and all that. And then that was Sunday, and then Wednesday, sorry, on the Wednesday, I got a phone call from my brother, and I thought, what's that brother ringing me for? And he was like, oh, how are you? And I was, you know, like when you talk to somebody and you just speak automatically because your mind is thinking something completely different. I was thinking, I've known him since I was a child. Yes, I've known him, I've met him on numerous occasions, I've stayed at a house, but he's never rung me. What is he ringing me for? And it was all this small talk. And he said, I'm really sorry, I've got some really terrible news. And he told me that my friend had been out. It was actually her husband's birthday, and they were living in Cambridge at the time, although the party was in London that we'd been to, so they'd gone back to Cambridge the next day. And she was walking past King's College, Cambridge, when a person had mounted the pavement in the car and knocked a group of people down. They weren't the only ones. I think he was the only fatality, the little boy. He was killed instantly. She had to have her spleen removed. She had a broken ankle, ribs and all this, and she was very sick. And, you know, we went to her funeral. Oh, that's an awful thing to say. Sorry. We went to his funeral, and it was all very traumatic and very, very upsetting, and I don't know how they ever came to terms with it. And she was expecting another baby at the time, which was really weird because she survived and was born, and she's fine, and she's at, you know, I think she's in her final year at Cambridge, actually. And then they had another son 2 years later, but how they got over it, I don't think you can ever get over it, but the whole thing had such a profound effect on me, because I would never have, well, I'm not saying I would never have had children, but I might never have had children. And I felt so guilty because if it hadn't been for her, me finding out she was pregnant that day, we might have never, you know how things happen one moment in time and all that? We might have never decided to have them. Niall, off the grass. I don't want them eating grass and stuff. and so I felt really guilty, apart from being absolutely heartbroken and devastated on her behalf. I felt really guilty that I had my son and she didn't anymore. And it was really awful. And I always remember, I can honestly tell you,
with my hand on my heart, never ever a day goes by without I don't remember him. I mean, without me remembering him. I only met him once. I met him on the 16th of May 1993, and he died on the 18th of May. So they're the two things that are linked. You know, this is his birthday. He was born on the 13th and he died on the 18th the following year. And never a day goes by when I don't remember him. Honestly, I can honestly tell you that in all these years, because it had a profound effect on my life. And it wasn't even me that was involved, but I was involved in a way, and I actually told her about this. I waited a long time, and when he would have been 18, I told her how, you know, how I'd always felt about him, and, you know, how I, you know, I treasured, it was a really treasured memory of meeting him. He was a lovely little boy, he was really beautiful. And he was just learning to stand up and stuff, and it was just so sad. And I told her, you know, about me having fun and that. And I didn't tell her about it. We were talking on Messenger on Facebook at the time. But she said, oh, maybe look. She said, oh, you really made him cry. But she said, it's in a good way. I never told her, you know, all those years. And I thought, well, I do want to know, because he is special. I don't know what that alarm is, if you can hear it. It's a fantastic noise. So that's the most dramatic one, or dramatic, in May. Another thing is, the 30th of May was my first wedding anniversary. And again, we had a lovely day, and that was life-changing, because obviously when you get married, it is. Even though we'd lived together for a few years beforehand. When you get married, not that there's anything wrong with people who don't get me wrong, but it does prove a commitment, I think. And even though it didn't work out, I don't regret it. I find myself not regretting it. We had a lovely day. It was a beautiful day. The months of May is a beautiful day. I don't know what I'm talking about. It's a caffeine rush. May is a beautiful month. It really is. I think it's probably my favourite month of the year, because you've got all the blossom everywhere. The blackbirds are still singing. You've got some really warm sunshine, cool nights. It's not become stuffy or unpleasant. And you get some lovely rain, and it's really, I think, I would say, my favourite month. Another thing was, it was 20 years ago on the 11th that my cat that I'd had from childhood, she was 16 when she died, and that was 20 years ago. She's unbelievable to me. And it came at the end of a very dramatic few months for me, when I had a miscarriage and a fire and lost a cat and a dog, a retired guide dog and another cat. And I was very much at breaking point, and that was like the final straw, really. But she was a special companion. I know some people won't understand that, because, you know, some people don't understand how pets can be part of your family. But, you know, when you've had them from I wasn't an early age, I wasn't a baby or anything, but I was young, and she was my special cat, and I always looked after her. And I left home, and I paid for her food. And the vet's bills and everything, because she stayed with my mum for, quite a few years, actually. I had her for the last, I can't even remember, was it 6 years? I think I had her. The last 6 years of her life, she lived with me, and she didn't like other cats, and she hated dogs, actually. She led the dogs a merry dance. They learned to keep out of her way. She was a tiny little thing. And when I came home from school, because my mum does cat rescue work, she was doing it back then and she's still doing it now. She said, we've got this little kitten. I've called her Scrag, and she was a tiny little thing. She was a long-haired tortoiseshell tabby, or a torby as they call it. And she was a scrappiest, tiny thing. She was meant to be 8 weeks old, and she had
her tail was like it had been like a corkscrew. It was like it had been broken. It was deformed, really. And she couldn't wag her tail like a normal cat. She could only wag the tip of it, you know, if she was displeased. And when she came, my mum said her eyes were completely closed. She'd never been able to see. And when you touched her, she screamed because she was frightened. She didn't know what it was, and it was her defence mechanism. And it took my mum 2 weeks of bathing her eyes open every day before she could see. It's a wonder she didn't have permanently damaged eyes. Her own mother, her cat mother, was 16 when she had her, and they got her. My mum got paid. Well, she didn't pay, but her charity paid for the people to get the mother spayed, because she asked the vet, "Is it too old to have a cat spayed?" And they said, "Well, you know, the chances of her dying when she's having kittens if she keeps breeding like that are high." But she survived the operation, and there was another kitten in the litter, but that got killed by the family's pet dog. So I think that's. It was a red setter, an Irish setter. So I think that's probably why she didn't like dogs. She led mine a merry dance, I tell you. The first day we brought her home, she spat at my husband, and he said, "We've got her on a month, right? We've got her on a month's trial," because he was asthmatic, and one of the things he's allergic to is dogs and cats. But he kind of grew out of it over the years, and I agreed to it. I said, "That's." You know, that's fair enough. If you're allergic to her, I agree that she has to go back to my mum. And my mum was fine with it too. So anyway, we put her in the spare bedroom because, you know, you can't let cats out for a month when you have them. And he went in there and she went... She spat at him. But she got used to him and he got to really love her. But not before a few times of him saying, "That cat's got to go," because she terrorised his guide dog. One time she chased her into the bathroom and she wouldn't let her come back out. And another time... she got my friend's dog cornered behind an armchair. She didn't hurt them, but she just stared at them. One day I came home with my new guide dog, and she chased the cat up the stairs, and I thought, and then I was unpacking upstairs, and my sister was living with me at the time, and we heard the dog barking downstairs. I said, "Oh my God, she's killed Scrag." When we went down, no such thing. Scrag had got cornered, and that's what she was barking for. So she left her alone after that. And sometimes in the morning, because I used to work in London with my husband and I, but my then husband and I both did, you know, we had to get up early, commute and all that. So before we had our garden renovated and had a special pen built, which was when we had kids, and because we wanted them to be able to play in the garden without treading in dog's mess, we just used to let them out because it was a horrible old garden. It was all horrible, broken, crazy paving. We never really went out there much. So, I mean, obviously we cleaned it up, but, you know, we just used to let the dogs out. That's what I'm trying to tell you. So we opened the door, and in the morning they'd stand there because I had my retired dog, and then we had both the new dogs, you know, my husband's dog and my new dog. And they're like standing there, and I'm going, "Go on, get out, hurry up." And I'll push them out the door, not roughly, but as much as I say, "Go on, get out there," because I haven't got time to mess around in the mornings, you know. And all of a sudden we're... It's because we didn't really know that Scrag was in the front of the queue waiting to go out, and the dogs were all frightened to go past her, and that's why they wouldn't go out. One night, what happened to her one night? One night we thought we'd lost her because she hated the other cat. I had two other cats as well, and she didn't like them much. And she particularly didn't like this black and white one called Bobo. And she was a feral cat, and she was all right with me, but she was very frightened of everybody else. And, you know, when I used to open the back door, and like Bobo used to go out the door, Scrag used to hit her up the backside as she went. And this particular time, they had a fight, and my sister was there, and she went over the top and screamed and shouted and threw something. I think it was water, and it was dark. It was, you know, in the evening time. And there was a load of piles of wood out in the garden, and we thought she went and hid under one of those, so we just left it. And that's Scrag talking about, not Bobo. She was all right. And we didn't know where she was, and she didn't come back, and it got to midnight. And I was so worried. We all were. So we got a torch, my sister and my ex, and we went up to the end of the garden. Now, we used to have this huge shed. It was the whole width of the garden. And it was all made of railway sleepers. Because I don't know where this bloke... Everything in the garden was done with railway sleepers. I don't know where he got them from, whether they were ill-gotten or what. No idea. Anyway, we used to just keep it as a storage area and put stuff in boxes and stuff, things we didn't want in the house, you know. And we went in there shining the torch around, and then all of a sudden my sister said, "Here she is," and she was curled up in a box with her eyes shining, reflecting in the torchlight. She's just lifting her head up, rolling her eyes as much to say, "Oh, what's going on here?" so she was a real character, and I really missed her when she was gone, you know. I knew she was going downhill because she had kidney problems, and that's very common in cats. Back then, there wasn't really the medication. You can get medication now which helps to prolong their life, you know, to prolong the kidney function, but it wasn't around back then, or if it was, I didn't know about it. So, you know, I'm sure there was something else I was going to tell you about her antics. What else did she do that was really naughty? Oh, she had this problem with constipation. This is maybe not for the faint-hearted. And so we took her to the vets, and we saw a Belgian vet. It's not the vets I go to now. They weren't there then. It was over in Bromley, and I went over there with her and this Belgian vet. She was really nice, and she said, "Well, what you need to do is give her a tablespoon of liquid paraffin in her food." So I did that, and the result was an absolute disaster because it all came straight through and she was covered in it. And then we realised that she'd got it mixed up, and she told me it was a tablespoonful, and because it got, you know, mixed up with, because she was from another country and English isn't her first language, and it was meant to be a teaspoonful. And we had people come into dinner, and my sister and I had to bath her in the bathroom sink. And if you've ever tried bathing a cat, well, you'll know what I'm talking about. And if you haven't, then please never ever try it. It was like all hell came to visit us that day. So that was 20 years ago. I can't believe that she's been gone that long. She was a very playful little cat. She used to like to retrieve a little ball. She had these pom-poms and used to throw it, and she learnt to put it in my hand when she brought it back. She was a real, real character. And she was quite timid, but as I say, she didn't tolerate... Oh, I know the other thing was, when I was still living at home and my sister and I shared a bedroom, we had this big dog. He was a cross between a German Shepherd and a Doberman. And when we had him, we found him. My mum followed my mum home once in the snow, and we took him in, and then his owners claimed him and they had him back. And we were so upset because we really loved him. His name was Duke. And we said, "If ever you don't want him, please let us know." And about a year later, they rung up and said, "Were you really serious?" Because they said, "He keeps getting out. Our garden's not secure. We live on a main road and he chases motorbikes. And it's so dangerous for everybody. So we decided we'd have him." But he wasn't very good with the cats when we first had him. He used to chase them. And one day he was in my bedroom with me because I was between dogs. My dog went back after a year because she was too much of a handful. And I was really missing her, so I used to take him out, and I had a little bit of sight then, but I used to go for walks with him, and I managed to teach him to do things like find the postbox and stuff like that. And if you said, you know, you'd speak, if you said, "What do you say, please," and that, when you give him a treat, he'd go "Woof," like that. And he was really lovely. I loved him. He was a lovely dog. And he was in my bedroom with me one day, and my sister was in there as well, and we were just like listening to music or whatever one afternoon. And we had this other cat called Tartan. She was like a tabby cat. Well, my dad called her Rainbow, but her real name was Tartan. And she was in there, and Scrag was in there as well. I know it was a bit like Animal Farm. And all of a sudden, for no reason, Duke chased Tartan all around the room. And, I said, we shouted at him, "Don't do that." And then Scrag was up on the bed with me, and she jumped down and she chased him across the room, and she hung onto his back. She stood up on her hind legs. I mean, if you knew the size of him, he was a big dog, and she was like, she weighed 5 pounds, I think. She chased him across the room. She got hold of him by his back legs, and he was scrabbling to get up on my sister's bed. He was he was absolutely terrified. Anyway, so that was Scrag. And I often dream about her, very often dream about her. You know, I can still imagine what she feels like. She had very soft fur, very soft. And
And one day she never really caught birds or anything, but she was terrible. You know, she'd be looking out the window and she'd be going, if cats watch birds, that's what they do. They make all these movements with their mouth, and what they're doing apparently is like a reflex action, but they're actually practicing their killer bite. And one day she came running in the back door, and she came running into the hall, and my mum said, she's got something. When we looked, it was a huge, huge long worm. And the only other thing she managed to catch was she got a slug stuck in the fluff of her tail once, which was absolutely gross. But, she hated the cat next door. There was a tortoiseshell cat next door. What was her name? Mitzi or... I can't remember, something like that. And she used to make all sorts of noises. And she saw her out the front window. She'd puff up twice the side and go, wow! Now, the other anniversary, the last thing I'm going to talk about today is... Lammy, Toof-Toof, Inspector Yusuf. They're jumping at the man blowing his nose. It happened 12 years ago on the 12th of May, and he did cause ructions in the family because my husband didn't agree with me getting him. But you see, the thing is, I wanted another baby and he didn't want any more. He said we couldn't afford it, which we couldn't, so I went and got a poodle instead. I don't think I could have coped with three kids. I think two's company and all that. And there was quite a big age gap between my two because I had a miscarriage. He was a rescue poodle. I didn't pay for him. But I've never regretted it because he's been a real... I mean, I know he's a pain in the arse sometimes. He chases the cats and he barks and does all the things that dogs do. Niall standing in front of me. Where's Toof-Toof? He can't be far away. But I've never regretted it. He's been such a lovely companion to me. I mean, all my guide dogs are, don't get me wrong, but it's a different sort of friendship with a small dog. I think he's different. They're kind of like a cross between a cat and a dog because you can pick them up and, you know, I don't mollycoddle him and pick him up much. I don't pick him up much, actually, but he'll sit on my lap, he'll sit next to me. If I'm not well, I'll lay down, he'll get up on the bed with me. He's like a hot water bottle. He follows me wherever I go. He's so faithful. You couldn't get a dog. I don't believe there's a dog more loyal than him. I'm not saying there are plenty that are as loyal as him, but he's a very, very loyal dog. You know, if I go out, he cries. He doesn't like it. He's watching the whole time for me to come home. Everyone dreads it. They say, oh, God, you're not going. Oh, no, I'm not going to be left with him, am I? And he's a lovely friend. And I'm very worried about... You know, he's getting old, he's 12 and a half now. And he's still very lively, but you never know. And, oh, God, I feel sorry for everyone around me when his time comes, if it's before mine, that is. And, you know, which I'm hoping it... I'm not that I want to wish him away, but I dread... I'm really upset about the idea of anything happening to me and me leaving him behind. So, when I go away on holiday, he goes to my mum's because he can't cope here without me. He's terrible there at first. He'll be flinging himself at all the doors, thinking I'm in one of the rooms. But then after about an hour, he calms down and he doesn't really attach himself to anyone. He does love my mum, though. But when anyone comes there, like my sister, if my sister comes there, he goes berserk. And he just keeps doing this certain crying that he does. And it's like he's saying, what are you going to do about it? Because he connects me with her and he thinks she's going to bring him back here. Or wherever I'm living or whatever. So when I go up to Skye in September, he will be going to my mum's. I'd love to have taken him, but he can't come in the cabin with me, and there's no way on earth I'd ever put him through going in, you know, where the pets go. There's absolutely no way that's ever going to happen. Yeah, that's Lamb. He's a little character. He's sometimes naughty. He goes down the bin and... You know, he doesn't always do as he's told. The Tesco's man last week is lucky that he was actually sitting on the floor and not on my lap when he kissed me, because he probably would have got bitten. Not bitten life-threateningly, but snapped at. He probably wouldn't have left a mark, but... See, then what would have happened? Oh, he would have probably reported him and I would have been in trouble. Anyway, that's a good story. He's a very, very loyal dog.
and he's funny. And the good thing about it all that's really made me happy is that Obi really loves him. Now, Obi's a dog person more than a cat person. But in Nigeria, dogs don't have the same status mostly that they do in the UK. They're mostly dogs that live outside. They go into the people's houses sometimes, but they don't tend to sleep in there. And they have a very, very tough life. Very tough. So do the people. So you can't expect the dogs to have a privileged life like they do in the Western world. So, you know, and I thought when he comes here, he's going to love Niall, he's going to love playing with him, which he does. But I thought, oh, he's probably going to hate Tooth Tooth because Tooth Tooth's jealous and he growls if anyone comes near me. And the first day, me and Obi sat down in the cuddler together and Tooth Tooth got up on my lap and he was like, you know, because he was cuddling me and he was giving it all that. But he didn't take any notice of it. And he's fine. He was fine with him really quickly. And Obi really loves him. You know, he even says, oh, I love you, you fool. Fool, he calls him. I love you, fool. And then I say, you love him, don't you? He goes, no, I don't. I hate him. But he doesn't. He really loves him. And I'm pleased about that because I thought that, you know, there was no way I was going to shut him out of my bedroom because he comes in my bedroom. Niall sleeps downstairs, but Tooth Tooth sleeps in a basket under my bed. I mean, when it was just me and him, he would sleep on the bed. And I never told him he couldn't get on the bed, but with Obi there, he doesn't sleep on the bed. He gets up there sometimes, if like when Obi goes to work or whatever. But that's good. It's worked out well that way, you know, because there was no way I was going to be shutting him out of his bedroom in his last, you know, his golden years. There's no way I was going to say, well, you've slept up here with me all my life, but actually now I've got someone else, you can go downstairs, actually, you know. That's not happening. So, thankfully, we didn't have any trouble about it. And we all fitted in together like one big, happy family. Anyway, I think I really have gone on long enough for my swinging seat. And it's getting a little bit chilly. And my coffee's going cold, and I have been drinking it. And I've got some baked potatoes in the oven because I'm having a late dinner because it's just me and Obi. Obi's asleep, and he told me to wake him up at 7, but it's gone 8:30 now, and I think I better wake him up. And Connor's at his girlfriend's, and Ronan's at his dad's, if I didn't say. Are we all in? Where's Tooth Tooth? He's here. They're both there. I don't know about the cats, but they can go in their own door if they want to. Night-night, birdies. So we're having jacket potato with tuna and salad and stuff. An easy dinner. It just doesn't need much preparation at all. So I think I better go and attend to that. Wake his lordship up and upload this. And I'll speak to you tomorrow.